one on the agenda. Board is still here. An agenda review.
No changes to the agenda.
Okay. Introduction of guests and superintendent's report. Okay.
You've got a number of guests, some of whom it appear are not here yet, but you are going to have a number of guests who you're going to have a chance to hear from and speak with later as you move into the appointments for the budget committee. In terms of the superintendent's report, just real quickly, I've included in your red folder some ongoing information related to both the Race to the Top application process and the letter from Governor Kulongowski and Susan Castillo, that they're looking for feedback and input as they move forward in the process. At your last meeting, I shared with you the list of the folks who are involved as a part of that and the committees, the work groups, but the timelines are getting pretty short, as Beth mentioned to you. And if you have a chance, you might want to check the website if you haven't had a chance, and it's listed there in the letter from the governor. As the letter says, and this was reaffirmed by Susan Castillo in a meeting I had with her and a couple of other superintendents today, they do strongly believe that they're in a pretty good position to compete for the Race to the Top dollars and put in an application that should be successful. So they're pretty optimistic that we're in a good position to do that, and that would be very great for us and for the state. The second piece that is in there is about, and we've talked about it, and more information appears to be coming out about the I-3 or innovation grants, investing in innovation. And it's mentioned in there, but if you're really interested in what the Secretary of Education and folks are looking at, they have the draft Federal Register information that I printed out, and these are back-to-back pages, so this isn't just, it's 80-some pages of information about the kinds of things that they're looking at with respect to the I-3 grants and the required, what they call must-do elements of any grant proposal, the criteria that have to be met, and we've talked about those before. They also have at their website some PowerPoint slides which talk about the kinds of things they're looking at. And as we've talked about, and this might be something that if we're interested in, they are very interested in partnerships, and particularly partnerships with nonprofits, including and maybe even specifically higher education, as you look at putting together grant proposals for the I-3. And remember, the I-3 are the ones that what they call LEAs, or local school districts, can apply directly for on a competitive basis, as opposed to a state grant, which the Race to the Top dollars are. And so we may be wanting to think about, are there some partnerships through higher ed or with some of the nonprofits that might be fruitful as a way to look at. The other piece that was interesting, and I hadn't either picked up on before or maybe had just missed it, was the part with the private sector investment and the piece that asks for either some kind of private sector investment or in kind up to 20% commitment as a part of the grant proposal to look at the innovation grant. So more will be coming out on this, and it's open for comments at this point through the U.S. Office of Education and the Secretary's Office. So that piece. And then the third thing and last thing I want to mention is that this Friday, the 9th, is a furlough and unpaid day for most of the staff in the district. And that means that essentially all schools and offices will be closed. The central office will be open, but on a very limited basis, because only some of the administrative staff will be around, and some offices will essentially be closed, so they're only looking at taking doing business on the appointment basis. So this will essentially be a shutdown day. And as you recall, that those are furlough and unpaid days as a result of the budget reductions that were approved and or negotiated for this year as a part of the reductions in budget for this year. So that's all I have.
Thank you. Next is comments by student representatives. Linda from IHS.
Student government is holding elections tomorrow. We're hoping to avoid having a popularity contest by having candidates write word process paragraphs, which will then be presented anonymously to each class. Students will then vote for leaders based on their eloquence and clarity of thought alone, or at least that's the hope. Elected students will then join student government on the first Sunday of November for orientation and other fun student governmental things. And of course, we are very eager to meet them. IB testing fees are also due on October 16th. IB, for those not in the know, is an abbreviation for the International Baccalaureate, an international standard of education in college-level courses for high school students. It's similar to AP-level classes, but it can provide college credit for universities around the world. And finally, students are just getting back into the swing of things with their IB extended essays, a 4,000-word research paper that makes up a significant portion of the IHS 12th grade curriculum. Rough drafts are due next week on October 15th, and we are all working very hard to make that deadline. Thank you. And that's all.
Sasha, Sal?
Well, I'm from the South, and student government is mostly spending time working on social events such as homecoming, which we've been talking a lot about. Freshman elections are coming up this Thursday, which will be exciting. We have lots of posters and stuff, so that should be good. And, yeah, that's basically what we're working on right now. So,
Jenna?
So our student government right now is, again, working on homecoming. It's going to be November 7th, and we have a theme of Old Hollywood. They're working really hard to make work. And last night, we had our first and only open house that went well, and NHS had a silent auction there that, as far as I know, went well as well. And this year is our second year of doing advisory, and I thought you guys should know that since it is only our second year, we've been having difficulties with making it mesh between the students and the teachers and having both of us doing things that we deem worthwhile. So that's still something that we're working on. And finally, our parking lot and the entire road in front of our school has been renovated. And we've been having some issues. The students have been having issues with the parents not stopping at the stop sign, blocking their way to get into the senior lot. So just as something for the parents to know, if you could stop, that'd be helpful. And that's all.
And what do your parents do? No.
Next item is items raised by the audience, and I have no cards, so if there's anybody who wants to speak, okay. Comments by employee groups?
Hello.
Hi.
Some of you know me already. I'm Dana Mitchell. I'm Eugene Education Association's 4J Vice President for this year. And I wanted to share with you some information on how EEA is gearing up to address the tax fairness measures that are coming up in the special election January 26. We're working in coalition with Oregon Education Association and Defend Oregon to pass the two measures to reform Oregon's tax system. I want to let you know that if you have an open invitation to come and talk with our members about the implications if these measures are not passed in January. And we have a rep council meeting in December 14th, where we have representatives from every building that come. And it would be a great audience for you to share with. We are starting our phone banking starting in November. We're also considering some canvassing as well as an idea that actually Mara brought up today, which would be somewhat of an email canvas on personal email. And we are working to get our members to go out and support the tax fairness measures. So if you need any information or you'd like to be working with us on that, we're here and available to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Even though it feels a little different not having Paul and Mary here. So.
You're enjoying
that. Okay. So thank you.
Brad, I think I saw Tim Gleason in the hall. Would you tell him that he actually has an assigned seat? You'd like it? Well, we have enough seats. We can make it work.
Be separate.
Thanks. Okay, items for information.
I know Martha's trying to hide back there in the back next to Laurie, but I'm going to ask her and Janice Swan to come forward. We wanted to take this opportunity to recognize Martha, and unlike what it says in your write-up in the board, Martha's actually from Roosevelt. She hasn't been reassigned, so she's still at Roosevelt. And Martha has been recognized for being selected by the Oregon Math Leaders as the State of Oregon's candidate for the Presidential Awards for Excellence in Mathematics and Science Teaching. This award is the highest recognition that a K-12 mathematics or science teacher can receive for outstanding teaching in the United States, and she is going to be one of Oregon's candidates for that. She was selected, as I mentioned, and is a finalist. She was honored at the annual Oregon Mathematics Leaders Conference in August of 2009 by the Oregon Council of Teachers of Mathematics. And her name is being forwarded to the National Science Foundation, which will choose the national award winner later this year. And she and the honorees will be invited to Washington, D.C. in the fall of 2010. As a part of that honor. So we wanted to recognize and honor Mana and say congratulations to her. And I wanted Janice to get a chance. Janice, as you all know, kind of covers mathematics and has been pushing the mathematics for a number of years now. So she was going to say something both about Mana and about what we're doing to improve our math instruction in 4J.
So. Well, the other pusher of mathematics is my partner here. I can't say enough about Marna, and I'm extremely excited. And I believe she is going to be the national finalist. But for a variety of reasons that I would like you to know about, because you might not know just how much work she has done over the years for this school district on a very small amount of time. Since 2000, she has been the math TOSA for the school district, and that sounds like, wow, that's a lot of time. But she's actually only done that at a 0.17 FTE, so she's been doing classroom teaching and district work since 2000. And that small amount of FTE has created a monumental amount of vision for this district in mathematics, and she's been involved in the textbook adoptions clear back then. She's been involved as a leader of the math teacher leader groups and math enthusiast groups. She has mentored many teachers. I consider her my mentor. I always go to Marna if I have questions. We brainstorm weekly about what to do, how to best serve our students, and how to best serve and support our teachers in the school district. And I can't think of a finer person to be leading this this initiative. So, and couldn't do it without her. And a lot of other people. So, congratulations.
Thank you.
So math, though, you know, we can't leave without saying a couple of things about what we're doing in this district. I had the opportunity of sharing a few things with you last spring. Where we are to date is we are in the process of providing professional development to every third, fourth, and fifth grade teacher in this school district and specialist around the new core standards. There'll be three sessions offered to every teacher, and Marna is taking the lead on that with other staff development specialists supporting this endeavor. It's a lot of work. We want it to be meaningful for the teachers. We want it to be hands-on. We want it to be productive. We want them to have something to go back and use in the classroom. Our wiki, Math Wiki, is up and running. Tomorrow, you're doing a work sample workshop with all of our new or teachers in grades 6 through high school that need and want support in providing good, strong work samples in this school district for mathematics. So she's leading that endeavor. You could even help me out a little bit, too.
No.
No. And then the follow-up to that is that we want to be able to have district work samples for all of our teachers that are providing work sample work in mathematics at the district level for them to use, so that we have some consistency and some systemic work going across the district. Our math teacher leaders, we've purchased great books. We're going to start a PLC, a professional learning community, and we're going to be reading great math books, talking about great math materials. And so we have math correlations that the teachers have developed, and they are working very hard to take their old curriculums and use those materials to add and adding to them and teaching the standards. So, George, I could go on and on, but I just wanted you to have a little update. There's a lot of work happening, and a lot of it is because of...
So we want to congratulate Marna, but I'd also like to hear from her if you've got anything you wanted to say, Marna.
First of all, I think 4J students are absolutely wonderful. It's my 37th year of teaching, 23 of them at Roosevelt Middle School, and I wouldn't have stayed there if there weren't such wonderful students that we have. They're just exciting. They're invigorating. They renew my energy every time I walk into the classroom, and I'm just so proud to be a 4J teacher, and I'm so proud of the support that the district's given us in this effort moving forward with these brand new state standards and implementing them. I know it's going to be wonderful when all the teachers are on board and doing hands-on interactive things with the students.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Next is receive an update on the Summer Bridge program.
Lori and Brad are coming forward.
We have a couple of documents, too, as a matter of fact, that we just might hand out. Do you think before we get going?
Sure.
So I'd like to reintroduce Brad New to you all. Brad New is the secondary education administrator, and he and I work closely together on all things secondary and then some. So what we wanted to do is take a few minutes to share with you what has been going on with the Summer Bridge program. And some of you are familiar with this and some less so. So to let you know, the Summer Bridge program is a program that's at all four high school campuses. And it's intended to support a small group of ninth grade students both in the summer before their ninth grade year and also during the ninth grade year so that they're successful. So that's really what it is all about. The Summer Bridge has actually been in place for 3 years. We've just finished our third year of Summer Bridge, and we began the first planning of the very first Summer Bridge in the fall of 2006. What we know, the reason we focused on this particular group of students is that we know that transition from middle to high school is really hard under the best of circumstances for most students. Even students who have been very successful in middle school often have a difficult time coming to such a large campus. Certainly there's the issue of credits. Credits don't exist in middle school. It's a large group of teachers, many, many teachers students have to get to know. Learning the locker system, counselors function sometimes in different ways, and so on. So we know that it's easy for many students to really get lost as ninth graders. And we also know that the research is quite clear that if students are successful during their ninth grade year in terms of gaining credits, the grade point average, attending well, and so on, if they can have a successful ninth grade year, chances are increased that they will actually graduate from high school. So we thought one area of focus was really on the ninth grade year, and we've done quite a bit of work on that. It's really a pivotal year, we think. Brad's going to talk a little bit about a study that we based some of our work on, and actually Alicia, I think, was one of the folks who learned a little bit about Connected by 25, which is maybe some of the rest of you, I can't quite remember who was part of that, but a number of years ago, Portland Public School conducted a fairly extensive study on what happens with a cohort of students as they go through high school, and they learned that ninth grade core course failure, and when we talk about core courses in high school, we are thinking of math, language arts, social studies, and science. Those are really the core courses. So if a student fails in core courses in ninth grade and a student has insufficient credits, those students are 5 times less likely to graduate from high school. So that data we thought was pretty powerful, and we really built quite a bit of the Summer Bridge program around that data. I think it's important to note that the Bridge program was really one of the very first attempts at doing systemic work at the secondary level. So instead of having one high school starting a program that was specific to the high school, we decided that really this is a program that ought to benefit students in all of our high schools or coming into all of our high schools. And we launched a big effort around that. And as I said, in the fall of 2006, we started planning. A large group of people met, and I have to credit both Casey Clark, Special Ed Administrator, and Eric Anderson, who's now the principal at Roosevelt. They took some very significant leadership roles, played some significant leadership roles in getting this going in the beginning, particularly. But we had a large group of teachers, administrators from both middle and high school, special ed, regular ed, ELL, from all of our sites, all of our regions, getting together and meeting regularly to talk about what this model might look like. And really, the first year was a planning year. The components of the program that were discussed included student selection, how will we determine which students ought to come to the program, when should the program exist, where should it be, what kind of credit should be offered, what kind of parental support is needed, are we going to transport the students, and so on. So while there was some agreement about essential components of the Bridge program in terms of, let's say, credit given, there was flexibility within the design so schools could make some decisions themselves. And I have to say that over the course of the 3 years, we've learned every year how to modify it and really improve upon the program. So it's changed to some degree from the beginning. But conceptually, it's for a group of students around 40 at each site and intended to support them. And the summer component of the program is academic, math and language arts primarily. And then there's also a component that has to do with relationship building and making a connection to the high school. We decided to have the program on each high school campus so the students would become familiar with what the high school is actually like. When we came up with a model for this, we looked at a lot of research and looked at models that really across the country and really developed our own. There are really two primary components of the Bridge program. The first is this approximately 4-week time during the summer, 5 days a week, half day, when students come to the campus and are taught typically by the ninth grade teachers with whom they'll make connections, and then we'll see them through the ninth grade year. Ninth grade counselors are often involved, and there's always an administrator and sometimes some classified support. Then the second part of the program is then a bit of FTE is given to the school in the way of a freshman specialist. And the freshman specialist then follows these students during the ninth grade year and checks in with them and meets with them and really finds out how to support them best. The budget, we came up with a proposal. We presented this proposal with the budget to the ILT and then to the superintendent staff and then to the budget committee, and it was approved, so we launched into it. One primary difference between in the third year of the bridge was that I really wanted to collect some data on how this, whether or not this was working. And as we pay more attention to accountability and how we use our dollars, I developed a way of trying to monitor that a little bit more, and it was an interesting experience. I went out to the high schools, the six high schools, I will say, Sheldon, Churchill, South, and then the three small schools at North, each individually three times a year. And I sat down with the principal, counselors, the freshman specialist, and sometimes some other teachers, and we looked at each individual student who had been in summer bridge during the summer. We looked at the transcript, we looked at attendance data, we looked at discipline referrals, credits earned, and we talked about individual students, what strategies were being used, what kinds of interventions had been tried, what was working, what wasn't. And I must say that that probably felt a little different to a high school principal. I know I've heard a few of them say that. We have not really done quite that close of a look at individual students at high school, at least in my time. That being said, I think you all will also hear, if the principal could have been here, that I think the principals felt a little bit on the spot around it, but actually liked the exercise. It really helped zero in on what was working and what wasn't. So I think I'll pause at that point and ask, and Brad can talk about some of what we've learned.
And I'll be speaking from this 4J Summer Bridge retrospective. And one of the very magnetic parts about Summer Bridge is it makes so much sense. I mean, the whole premise behind it being that when you're beginning high school, that's when it's going to be your proving ground, and if you have difficulty then, you're going to continue to have difficulty, and that is generally true, and focusing our attention at that time can give that student a springboard to success for the rest of their high school career. In terms of selecting students for Summer Bridge, the Summer Bridge, we just had our third summer, it's really been about doing continuous quality improvement, so that we're continuing to look at what we're doing and seeing, well, what were the results from that, and then tweaking it, getting input from the field, talking with teachers, talking with students, talking with administrators about what worked and what didn't work. So each time we're getting better and better at offering the service, one of the big pieces is, who do you select? Who is this going to be most effective with? And one of the big conclusions we came to is, if a student is having attendance difficulties, this may not be the intervention that's going to be effective with them, because it's a pretty short period of time, it's intensive. If they're having difficulties with attendance, they're going to miss a lot of it. So we have a finite number of slots, so we focused on the seriously at-risk, academically at-risk students, and that's based on OAKS test scores and grades. Special emphasis was paid on doing outreach to minorities and special education students so that they were aware that this was available, that if families wanted to make plans for the summer for their student to be there, that they would be ones who we were sure were in the know. In terms of a financial picture, what does this mean? It's roughly $100,000 per year just to do the summer program, and that's several teachers per site for those 4 weeks, and that comes to about $650 per student. In the summer of 08, we had 154 students who went through the program. Of those students, 92% completed the ninth grade. What we're trying to do is set a baseline. We have been struggling through this with the whole notion of compared to what? Compared to another student who might have come. So we're trying to set a baseline and improve on that baseline each time. Where we are now is really making some significant progress in students who were very likely to not either make it through the ninth grade or be successful in high school. And as you can see here, a good number are not getting Fs on their transcripts, not getting Fs in their core classes. I think the most telling piece are the last two items. There's 69% earned six or more credits. Six or more credits means that they're on track for graduation, so they aren't in a hole after freshman year. That's huge. These are 154 students, and 120 of them are going to go into their sophomore year not feeling like they're working up a big hill. And finally, they had a attendance rate that was fairly consistent with what an average attendance rate would be. 70% had a 93% or higher. Compared in talking about how we're trying to improve from year to year, you can see below there the comparisons between 2007-2008. Get a small increase in our attendance rate. What we're tracking is how they did in the year after they were in the Summer Bridge program. So it's not just how did you do in the 4 weeks of the Summer Bridge. What effect did it have during your academic year? So they're attendance rate from 07 to 08 was slightly better. The average credits earned is a very large jump in terms of percentages or just impact in a student, almost an entire credit in addition to. And the grade point average was a slight increase. In terms of our minority and special education participation, we had more minority students in 2008 than 2007, and we had a substantial increase in special education students who are definitely a target population for us because we, as Lori was talking, we try to then take what's been happening, the relationships from the summer, and then move them on into the rest of the year. So they work with the special education staff and helping them get adjusted with the students who are new to the school and try to improve their graduation rate.
So I think then I'll move on to the second sheet you got, which is entitled, Summer Bridge Program Grade 9 Student Data Reviews, Summary Comments Following the May 2009 Data Visits. And this is really Lori's summary. This is somewhat subjective. But after having visited and visiting each site three times and talking in depth with teams about individual students, this is what surfaced for me. I think a couple things to say that really are overarching. First of all, over and over again, what came up was what role do middle schools play in this work? Because the expectations for learning and many times in the ways of credit are so very different from middle to high. How can we do this work in a little more connected way between middle and high? So what role could middle schools play? We talked about a great deal. We learned a lot about how to do better outreach with our families. Carmen and then last year Arbrila were particularly helpful in helping us make connections with some families that we haven't been very successful at reaching before. So that's something that we're certainly going to continue to build on. And I'd also say that while we don't have principals, teachers, or students here who participated in it, I think it's fair to say that there's an overwhelmingly positive response to this program. Those teachers, principals, and students have presented in various groups a number of times, and those who have been involved in it have been pretty powerfully affected across all campuses. So So to the sheet that is entitled Success is All About Connections, by the way, that's a quote from one of our leaders in our schools, and I think that really summarizes to me what Summer Bridge is all about. Beginning with the premise that if ninth grade core course failure is predictive of dropping out of high school, then serious and determined efforts must be taken so that students pass core courses in ninth grade. So we really have started to hone in on what does it take to pass a core course in ninth grade. So I won't go through each and every one of these, but we've learned that if students ought to be enrolled in year-long math and language arts classes, not just a half a year. And sometimes that means schedules have to change in high schools, and that's complicated. I also, number two, deliberate schedules. It's actually pretty easy in high school to make mistakes in terms of picking classes. I don't know if any students here have ever done that, but what we've learned is that someone has to be thinking very carefully about the course selection for ninth graders. It can't just be accidental. We've also learned that we should consider reducing or eliminating electives for some students in ninth grade. Now, that's kind of a risky thing to say. What we're learning is that there are many elective classes that have typically been viewed as elective, and actually Anne-Marie and I saw one today, have been viewed as electives, but in fact, if the teacher teaching the class is properly qualified to do the teaching, in a certain subject area, many times those can be granted high school credit in language arts, mathematics. We've seen that in woodshop. We've seen language arts possibilities in what have used to be called elective classes. So we're exploring how to do that so that the classes that students are in are engaging, hands-on, but also provide core course credit. We've learned, number four, that enrollment and support classes in double block study skills are terribly important. We need to have almost as much support for those students as the core course classes in some cases. That's kind of a second dose. In elementary, we call it double dosing. Number five, one adult is an advocate for each student. That's another key component of success. When you have an adult who actually knows a student, that helps a great deal. Outreach to parents, students getting feedback, number eight, bringing in some information to students about their own behavior and their own success so they can weigh in on it, letting them be more involved in it. Number nine, clear pathways for students to make up incompletes and adult commitment to ensure that they're made up early. So kind of tracking students who have incompletes and not letting them let those incompletes turn into a failure. Easy way for parents to know of student progress is very important. Oftentimes we trust that students will go home and tell their parents how they're doing in school, but in fact, for many ninth graders, that just doesn't happen. So we have to make that easier. Number 11, ownership of these students, adults taking active responsibility for their success. 12, being sure we can look at data to make decisions about student progress and placement. Sometimes we use contracts between teachers and students, sometimes signed by parents. Partial credit options ought to be looked at for some students so that if a student has not started out well in a class and promises to turn over a new leaf, then they can start fresh, middle of the term, and get some credit. Changing schedules when needed very early on. We know that number 16, providing support or reteaching after school or some other time that's outside of the school day is important. And then the notion of bringing students together so they've got their own cohort during the school year. So we continue to be optimistic about this program. We think it has tremendous potential. As I said, we're getting better at it every year in our data. We're eager to keep tracking the progress and watching the data to just improve as we go. So that is our report.
Questions? We've got a question about longitudinal data. It's getting late already for me. It sounds like you did it for 1 year. Are you going to keep track at the end of 10, 11, 12 graduation, to just see how it affects graduation rates, for example?
We certainly hope so. You know, some of us knew that this cohort graduation rate was coming, and so that's one of the reasons that we've been wanting to do that. Yes, we certainly hope to be able to continue to fund this program and to track it. The accountability piece is very important, I believe. I know Brad feels the same
way. And as time goes on, we'll be able to pick up new indicators like the eighth grade, how they did on their Oaks test in eighth grade and then in 10th grade. So we'll be able to pick up new indicators as the students that we started move up through high school. And being able to pull this data together in terms of their performance on particular courses was more difficult than it will be in the future, but since we now have standardized course codes, we'll be able to do this by computer instead of having a stack of 154 transcripts and go through and do the analysis. So that, in terms of us getting some coherence in our course coding, that will really be help us be able to hone in on who's being successful at what.
Alicia.
Very excited about the work. I had a chance to hear about this program with United Way. Looking at Mary, because it's your employer, I'm saying that.
Really, our community partners coming together to talk to our community about mm-hmm. this, so it wasn't just school folks. And I was also particularly interested because my son was in eighth grade at the time, transitioning into ninth grade. So I know a number of the students who have participated in this, and it's been quite successful for them, so I appreciate it.
Good.
Any other questions?
Just a comment. Mm-hmm. As you look at the what this program is built upon and the background that they've given you, and think about what I mentioned earlier about I-3 projects. A lot of the things that you describe here fit into the kinds of criteria and thinking that the Secretary's office has about the kinds of things they'd like to see proposed for I-3. Mm-hmm. kinds of grants, mm-hmm. and particularly if you can figure out a way to draw in community or other kinds of organizations and supportive groups within
the
community,
like
mm-hmm. United Way, or we're doing some work with NAACP around Saturday yeah. school and some other kinds of things that pulled together might make a powerful grant proposal under I-3.
It'd be interesting to see who a private partner would be with that, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's getting a little chilly now?
No, I was going to ask about the agenda.
Oh, the agenda. Yeah. It's really fairly quick at this point.
Eliza is going to be fairly quick unless you guys have a lot of questions for her. Eliza, why don't you come on up and we'll jump into the enrollment report. And I think for those who are here for the budget committee, enrollment plays such a significant role in how we budget and deal with resources. I think hearing the enrollment report would be good. So Eliza Drummond, who works in the instruction department and works with the enrollment, is here to give a update on where we are with enrollment based on our September 30 reporting data. Eliza?
Okay, thank you. Hello, everybody. Nice to meet you. I am Eliza Drummond. I work in instruction with Carl Hermans, and lately I've also been helping to implement the school choice program, including the recommendations that you gave for transfers at middle and high school level. And I have some comments about the report in front of you. It should have been in your red folder with data from each of the levels. Yep. And the last page shows enrollment history, including a graph, which is the basic message. Overall enrollment is down by 225 students this year, evenly spread at all levels. And we feel like this trend will probably continue for one more year into 2010-2011, when it will hopefully hold steady. And based on if the birth figures that we've been looking at are correct in 2011-2012, it will start to reverse and move back up again. And hopefully the economy will help us as well in that regard. Bright spots, if you look at the first page showing your elementary enrollment, bright spots are Howard and River Road and the successes there with their super boundary, as well as on the second page in high school, a focused effort at the upperclassmen grades, 11th and 12th grade, to retain high school students. We actually have 80 more than projected at the senior level across all schools, and so that's kind of nice to hear. Neighboring districts are also experiencing the same declines in enrollment. And if you have any questions, that's my report.
Data, how do you regionalize that to the districts, or you just look at it generally?
Well, I'm just starting to learn, but there are two ways. I got the birth data from the state, and they actually do it by zip code. And then we contacted LCOG to find out what percentage of certain zip codes fall in 4J and what fall in Bethel. And so we took those numbers and looked at trends, came up with a percentage, and then applied that percentage to the actual birth rates. So we're hoping that number will pan out.
Jim?
The value of 225 students in terms of dollars,
right.
How much is that one? When does it take effect?
Mm-hmm.
There's a process that the state uses for that. Could you describe that?
Yeah. I have some answers to that question, and hopefully if I misspeak, Caroline or Susan will assist. So actually starting with the second question, the financial effects of a lower than projected enrollment are experienced the year after the lower enrollment numbers occur. So a drop in enrollment in 2009-2010 will result in lower per pupil funding in 2010-2011. And in any given year, the state allocates funding based on the higher of either the current year or prior year's ADM. So this allows districts to reduce the size of their instructional programs thoughtfully as enrollment declines or possibly even levels out and maybe starts to return. And assuming that full funding of the state school fund next year occurs, we expect to receive $6,500 per ADMW, and so 225 students would result in a $1.4 million drop in state funding, and approximately $800,000 of this was anticipated, so we're looking at $600,000.
Thank you.
Okay. And you also had some questions about demographics, and I can just say that I think it's a general decline overall, all around the district. It's not in one region or another. What I'm seeing person to person is an increase in families who are having to double up, and a lot more transient families moving in and out of the district, which may have an effect on our enrollment figures.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Okay.
Well, I was going to wait to see somebody else.
Okay.
In terms of, you said you're also now involved in dealing with choice.
Mm-hmm.
We have, according to Shaping Eugene's Future, ideally four high schools of 1,250 or something mm-hmm. of that nature.
Right.
Do you see this balancing out 4 years into the future? Given the parameters that exist now, with mm-hmm. South and Sheldon being at roughly 1,500 and mm-hmm. Churchill at 1,100 and North at 1,000,
mm-hmm.
do you see with the changes we made mm-hmm. us getting to equalized populations?
I am optimistic that we will. The effects that we're seeing already is that Sheldon is dropping slightly. Churchill and North have held steady, and what we're looking at is the enrollment at the middle schools that feed into the high schools now, that cohort of students moving up through their grades into their neighborhood high schools, and being a familiar place for them to go to school, and that they go to their neighborhood school, that will happen. Yeah.
Thank you.
If you take the neighborhood if you just put everybody back where they belong, the regions are all pretty evenly distributed. So I'm very optimistic that it's going to happen.
Yeah. Any other questions? No. Thank you very much. Consent group.
Move approval.
Is there a second? Moved and approved to pass the consent group items. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Passes unanimously. Items for action of this meeting. Appoint a budget committee. Set the date for the first budget meeting.
Good evening. As you know, we have two budget committee members whose terms expired at the end of June, Tom Leininger and Wendy Lang. So tonight you will be appointing two members to fill full three-year term appointments. But then also, due to the appointment of Ms. Walston to the board last week, we have a partial term that we need to fill tonight also. That term runs through June 30th, 2012. We're fortunate tonight to have nine candidates for these positions. They're going to be asked to make brief presentations to the board about their qualifications and explaining their interest in the budget committee position. And then you will select the committee members by open ballot like you did last week. And Barb will explain that process when we get to it. After you appoint the members, we ask that you will set the first date of the budget committee meeting, which will be Monday, November 16th.
I think I'll go ahead and talk about the voting process at this time and then leave the table to those that have applied. You've got the same process that we used before. It takes four votes to appoint a budget committee member. Because there are two terms that are three-year terms and one that's a shorter term, I think when we start the balloting, we'll ask you to vote for two people that would fill those complete three-year terms through 2012. And then after we have those two people selected, we'll do a ballot for the shorter term. And I think that would be easier than picking three people and then trying to decide which one would have the shorter term on the board. So when we get to that point, after you hear from the applicants, you've got some starter ballots anyway in front of you, and we'll go through that process.
And we do have most members here tonight, but Ms. Gary had to leave for an 8 o'clock commitment. Mm-hmm. So.
Thank you.
Craig?
Jim?
Could you let me know who the holdover members on the budget committee are?
The four continuing members?
Shirley Clark.
Shirley Clark. Pete Peripsko. Deborah Smith. Yes.
Right, with an earlier name.
And
Betsy Boyd.
Thank you, Betsy Boyd. Thank you, Mary.
Glad you were here, Mary.
Yeah.
Just say those again for me. Why are we only doing two? Aren't there seven on the budget committee?
Yes, we've got four. We're doing three. We're doing two full terms and Mary's partial term.
Okay, so would you go through the four who are holdover again?
Yes. Deborah Smith, Betsy Boyd, Pete Scribko, and Shirley Clark.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Okay, let's start the process. First is Greg Gardner.
I'm Greg Gardner. I live at 2570 West 23rd Avenue in the Churchill School District. I have a senior son in Sheldon High School in the Spanish Immersion International High School program, so I'm really grateful for that program. I'm really grateful that 4J has that program. And my wife is a school teacher in the Bethel School District, so I want to disclose that. My interest... I'm interested in volunteering my time and some of my talent and in the community, and I felt that the 4J school board and in this case the budget committee would be a place where I could volunteer that time and effort. I've been responsible for developing operational and capital budgets in the electric utility business since 1990. So, and I can appreciate the last 2 years, you know, with the economic times, we've had to do some pretty deep cuts, and those have been difficult, so I appreciate what it takes to go through that process and then live with those budgets, and I've had to live with and operate within those budgets. So if you have any questions for me, I'd be glad to answer those.
Anne-Marie?
I do have one just from your application, and thank you for applying. Mm-hmm. Under number 6, you talked about the two most important issues, and you said funding schools and achieving the No Child Left Behind standards. Could you just elaborate a little bit?
Sure. Well, let me start with No Child Left Behind, because I just completed studies at Linfield College, and one of the terms I wrote a paper on No Child Left Behind. I felt that was a really important legislation. And being married to a school teacher and having taught apprenticeship myself for 16 years and so understanding teaching, the standards that those set, that legislation set, and then the fact that I felt that it wasn't really backed with the funding was important to me. And one of the things I hope to get out of this on a personal level is, it'll help me develop professionally, I believe, being involved with this process. But I hope what I learn I'm able to share at the end. And when I say share, I don't know if that means a letter to the editor or talking to local groups, but I'd like to be able to come out of this process and advocate for the schools. I'm a product of public education. My wife works in public education, and I think it's really important. I think it's, to me, it's probably one of the most important things in our society. So, again, if I can volunteer my time somewhere, I'd like to do it with the schools, as opposed to something else. So, other questions? Thank you for the opportunity, and if I can be of any help, I would love to do it. Thank you.
Greg did a great job, but I forgot to tell the rest of you. 3 minutes or so. Nice job. Tim, you're next. Tim Gleason.
And Carl.
Yes, Carl had to leave, so...
Hopefully my daughter's mother will have appeared before. I apologize for the in and out. We had a scheduling miscommunication. Well, good evening. I'm Tim Gleason. I'm actually quite honored to be here. As I look at the slate of candidates for this position, it speaks quite well, I think, of the city of Eugene and the commitment to higher K through 12. I'm a 22-year resident of Eugene. I have a daughter in fifth grade in the 4J system. I've been at the University of Oregon for 22 years, and for 14 of those years, I've been in administration. Something that is, I don't know whether that's good or bad, but it is what it is. I'm interested in this position really because I feel that I should be doing more in the community. I think as a family we do a lot in the community, but I've spent most of my life in the university system, and having had a daughter in the 4J system for the last 5 years, I've become even a greater advocate for K through 12 education. I've come to appreciate, I think, the excellent work that's done in 4J, and also I think come to appreciate the challenges that we face in this community in education at all levels, but certainly in K-12. I really believe that I can bring something to the district and to the budgeting process. Balance a budget in public education myself and know the ins and outs in that and the challenges that we all face. I think I have fairly broad experience both in the public sector and prior to entering higher education in the private sector as well, and understand the pressures that are faced as we look at tax increases or raising dollars to fund higher and K through 12. I have to say, I was happy to see coming in the Shaping 4J board goals and values on the wall behind you. I strongly endorse both, and also fully appreciate that it is extremely difficult to accomplish all of those goals while fully realizing that, as a professor I once had, he was talking about the Constitution, but I think it applies here. It's not a list of ice cream flavors on a board. It's not pick one and forget the others. It's achieve them all, and that presents us with extremely difficult challenges. I also think that our challenge throughout education is to find creative ways to solve problems and to creative ways to teach our children, and that those paradigms are changing dramatically, and that we face very significant challenges in educating the children who are walking in the door today. And I believe the Budget Committee can play a role in helping create an environment and a structure in which the great teachers and administrators in this district can do that. So, thank you.
Any questions for Dan? I've got just one question that I probably should have asked Greg too, but it's the time commitment. At least historically, depends how far back. Not many years ago, we didn't have many meetings of the Budget Committee. It's probably two or three meetings. Mm-hmm. We anticipate this year to be different because of the reasons. We may well have a significant adjustment in our budget for the next school year if the referendum is successful. And as we also already heard, our enrollment trends continue to go down. So I'm anticipating more meetings, and certainly what I think we all think that we need to provide more background to the Budget Committee to make the difficult decisions that we'll probably be facing this year. So I'm not sure how many more meetings that's going to be, but it's probably going to be more than we've had in the past. And so,
well, I appreciate that, Craig, and it is certainly something that I considered in applying for this position. I had a long conversation with Charles Martinez about it, and specifically about the question of time. Now, Charles assured me that it was manageable, but I was cognizant of that, and certainly it would be disingenuous for me to say that it is not, a question and would not create some challenges for me. But if selected, I would.
KRVM 1280 AM, Eugene, Springfield.
Meetings are typically Monday night.
That's actually a pretty good night for me, as things go.
I'm going to be asking that same question for the rest of the applicants, too. Any other questions? Thanks.
Thank you all.
I think it's Wendy Lang.
Which one?
Just in case we get
it. Okay. Hi. Good evening. I'm Wendy Lang, and you heard from me last week, so I'm thinking that you probably know who I am. I'm a concerned parent, a community volunteer, and a past Budget Committee member. I agree with the board's goal to provide prudent stewardship of the district's resources, and I hope that my experience and my knowledge and my commitment will help me make prudent decisions with the Budget Committee. My application and appearance last week, I think, described my qualifications and my ideals. So I'm not going to reiterate them, and I hope that's okay. I want to maybe... What you didn't get out of it, or I didn't say clearly enough, is I want to tell you about my commitment to the 4J schools and to our kids. And I just kind of was thinking about it in the car the day after last week, after I appeared here last week. I woke up on Thursday, and I answered an email from the EEF executive director who asked how many people I was going to bring to sit at my table. Later that day, I went to the school library because, as you know, our libraries, it's tough to get a full-time librarian in any school right now with the funding. Later on Thursday, I helped dress and escort about seven girls to their second grade soccer team. At 4:30, my husband, the football coach, picked up my son and took him to his football practice. I drove another daughter to Springfield that evening, and she plays club soccer with a bunch of other 4J students. I capped off my night with a meeting for my son's fifth grade trip to Costa Rica, of which I'm the chairperson. And Friday morning, I was at Monroe Middle School, ready and eager to work my three-hour shift in the front office. Our principal, Peter Tromba, asked me how the night before went. I'm giving you an accurate picture of my 2 days, of my average 2 days, really, because I want to convey to you my intense level of commitment. I interact with students, parents, administrators, teachers regularly, and not just in planned meetings. Last week, we spoke about all being stakeholders in this community, and I completely agree with that. I'm a stakeholder that wears at least four hats. I'm a school and community volunteer, a parent, a former 4J student, and a shareholder in a third-generation local business. I have the potential to engage with a multitude of other stakeholders and discuss critical issues that the budget committee will have to discuss this year and the next coming years. The coming budget process will require open communication between all stakeholders and experience. Since I've chaired many nonprofit boards, I'm sensitive to declining revenue. My legal training and business experience will help me to analyze problems and make prudent recommendations. And most importantly, my past experience on the budget committee during unprecedented uncertainty and economic crisis qualifies me to serve equally tenuous next 3 years. I hope to be able to return to the budget committee and serve in that capacity. Thank you. I understand the meetings will be on Mondays. And are there any other questions?
Thanks. I think Gail Merritt, is she here? Okay, just her sign. Rita Radistitz.
Hi, I'm Rita Radistitz. I grew up in Eugene, went to Meadowlark, Cal Young, Sheldon. I now am a single mom of two girls who are seventh graders at Roosevelt. They're twins. I am here for two reasons, Hannah and Sabella. And that's not really true, but I think that that's part of why I am interested in being involved, and I think it also is part of why I'm qualified, too. My background is I'm a lawyer who doesn't practice law anymore. I'm also a student of Dean Gleason's, or was a student of Dean Gleason's, so I have my master's in journalism, and I also work in the nonprofit world. I do fundraising, as that's my profession now, for the Environmental Law Alliance worldwide. And I teach in the 3 p.m. school, which might be a conflict because I'm teaching on Monday nights, but I think that's what I love about guest speakers. And so I think that we can work that piece out. When I walked into the room, I was reminded of the core values, which I participated last, I think it was two springs ago. There was a meeting with a lot of parents and stakeholders on how we should try to figure out those. We got to use the cute, wonderful clickers. And it reminded me of the importance of the symbiosis of those three, that you can't achieve excellence without the equity and the choice. And I also was thinking the whole way over here about the budget committee and how important it is, because if you tell me what you spend your money on, especially your discretionary money on, then you tell me your values. And I'll be honest, I'm here because I really believe the second part of the equity statement, which is that unequal distribution is always important to true equity. And as a mom of twins, I have to say that almost every day. You know, yeah, your sister gets two bites of that, but you got four bites of this. So I understand that concept, and I think that I
bring a perspective that is somewhat different. I bring a diversity of perspective. My daughters are Ethiopian. They've been in this country for 4 years, and they still don't speak English fluently. They have challenges in school because of it, and in part because of that, I've been very involved in their school. I was on parent council at Edison. I helped create the Diversity and Equity Committee at Edison, which created a 3-year plan. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but we did a lot of work, and Tom did an amazing job of leading us to do that. And I think Edison is a very different place for kids of color because of that. And I think that Tom took the time to create the incentives for the staff to buy into it and gave us all a larger picture perspective. And I think that's something that the budget committee can use, is a perspective of somebody who has looked at this system not from the perspective of the high achievers and not from the perspective of people who school is easy for, but for somebody whose kids are at great risk of not making it through the system, and not because they don't have the home support, but because of the inherent piece of starting late. So I think it would be a great privilege to be able to serve on the budget committee, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer, try to answer.
Your current occupation with fundraising, I'm sure mm-hmm. you're comfortable with budgets, but mm-hmm. it's going to be a tough year. And mm-hmm. so could you just speak to a little bit of kind of your understanding of budgets, your comfortableness with it? That's really good. So comfort, maybe?
Yeah. I mean, anyways. I work in the nonprofit sector, and so obviously we're constantly battling the budget. Just in my job, we lost a number of foundation grants, and so we're having to re-look at that. And I think that comes back to those priorities. What are your core values, and what do you have to, you know, I know that with this budget, there's a bunch of stuff we don't have a whole lot of discretion about. You know, you have to pay teacher salaries. That's a contract thing. But then you get to the hard questions and figuring out creative ways to make up those budget shortfalls or to make things more efficient, I think is probably the thing that somebody would be looking at, I would hope.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions?
Oh, sorry. Other questions?
Nope. Thanks.
Okay, Gary Rayer.
Thank you. I'm glad to attend again today. I've given you my background, 4 years of public service and budget committees and 8 years of appointed public service on committees. I've worked in the private sector all my life, you know, starting as a junior engineer and going up through a principal engineer at a pretty large firm. So I'm on the board of directors, and I'm also a trustee of the pension fund. So in our business, when costs go up, particularly medical, year before last it was 13%, and last year it was 27%, we had to figure out what to do. I think this is some of the same kinds of issue in addition to pension that's facing 4J. And what we had to do is we created a 125 plan for each of the employees, and they had to pay some of the additional costs, you know, depending if they were on it all by themselves or they had a whole family or just one child. And so if there's any one thing that I wanted to say, and whether I get on the budget committee or not, I'll probably come and testify to the same thing. I would like to see 4J be one of the governmental agencies that moves towards a total compensation package as a way of looking at payment. Because really, if medical costs cost more and more, that's actually a benefit they're getting. And so an employee in getting, this is public or private or anybody. So if somebody gets a higher level of pension or pensions cost more, that's a benefit. That it's not two separate pots. It's not a take-home pay pot. That's all the employee needs to look at, and all the school district has to look at is the total, you know, on the benefit side. It's one large compensation puzzle, and the public sector doesn't work that way, but really the system's breaking or it's broken, And I think most people here realize that. And I think if you don't start to address those core kinds of issues, you're not going to be able to bring the public along for votes for more money or, in a lot of ways, you know, why do the people at our firm have to pay their increase in medical, but public sector people don't? And I'm not trying to be down on anybody. What I'm trying to do is get to an equity where there's a realization that employees can't have blinders on to how much their overhead is, what overhead is, teaching what overhead is to everybody. The school system has it. PERS has helped breaking the deadlock about trying to deny it. And I don't want to see the students suffer because the adults can't tackle the serious issues. And if it's one thing I wanted to say tonight, you know, I've been before you. I've applied for this position before. And, you know, I'll come to talk to you and I'll be interested and I'll follow it. But I really would want you to think seriously about getting a diverse viewpoint in this way and getting this kind of stuff discussed. Because if it doesn't happen, I think it's going to be, you know, a bad situation. Bad situation. And I have my daughter to take care of. She's a kindergartner in fourth grade. And my Mondays are good nights for me. And so I'm going to have to leave and listen to the rest on radio. But I would answer any questions you have.
And the time commitment works?
The time commitment is fine on Monday nights. Is fine. Thank you. Thank you.
Ben Sappington.
So I just wanted to start off by thanking you all again for your time last week. I appreciated the discussion, and I think you guys have made a great choice in Mary. I think she'll represent the district well and also the community. So congratulations again. I think while my comments are going to be brief tonight, I want to share some of my experience with our local economy and with our community in the past couple of years. I started my banking career back in 2006 when the economy was not only strong, our nonprofits were doing well, our businesses were doing well, we had new business in the community. Since that time, I've seen local businesses struggle and fail. I've seen our nonprofit community become creative and resourceful with less resources. This has given me a unique awareness of the different nonprofits' budgets and how they are working and how they are being resourceful with the little resources they have, and also our businesses in helping them create business models and plans to hopefully stay open during these tough times. The district, a nonprofit itself, will be no different. In order to improve student achievement, resources will need to be allocated correctly. This is going to take tremendous teamwork between the budget committee, community stakeholders, and district leadership. This is part of a team that I'd like to be on. I think engaging those business leaders and those community members that work with the nonprofits is going to be key in bringing them to the table and helping get support to really get public education funded and make sure that our resources are allocated to the best of their abilities. While I might not have the years of experience other candidates have, my desire and dedication to learn and serve will make me an asset to this team. Difficult questions will face the committee, such as class sizes, staffing ratios, and possible school closures. These are all conversations I'm ready to have, and I really do want to be a part of this solution. Thank you all for your time and your consideration, and be happy to answer any questions.
Yes, just you didn't really address kind of the time commitment. And
sure.
That, so if you wouldn't mind.
You know, I actually was happy to hear that there was going to be more of an education and a steering from the board. While the meeting structure has been light in the past, I think it's good that the budget committee does get on the same page as the board as far as goals and looking at the direction the board would like to go. So the time commitment is fine. Monday nights are a great night. That's why they have DVR, I suppose, for all the good Monday night TV shows. But no, the time commitment will be fine and not a problem. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Okay.
Thank you.
Next is Richard Varner. Welcome.
So last but not least.
That's a, probably in a V.
Been that way all my life. So I'm Dick Varner. I'm the father of two 4J graduates. Both my daughters graduated from IHS, full IBs. So I've been through a few things at 4J. I was a site council member at Santa Clara and was there right before Santa Clara closed. So I've been through school closure thing. I've got a daughter who's physically challenged, and so we've had interesting dealings with administrators around IEPs and dealing with those issues. My wife works for 4J Transportation, so you know that. I've got one daughter who's studying to be a middle school language arts and social studies teacher. Hopefully there will be a job for her when she graduates somewhere. My son-in-law is a middle and high school band teacher. One of the things that got me interested in budget committee was seeing what the impact was to him of a school district that did not manage its finances well. After 2 years of building a band program, he was laid off because they were $5 million in the hole, and they cut their music program. So it was a difficult time for him. If you look at my personal experience, of 32 years in various public agencies, 18 of which as the person who managed the development of eWeb's budget. I've been through some tough times and some good times there. If you talk to anybody who has been involved with those budget processes, you'll know that you'll hear from them that I'm usually the person that you call on when times get tough to come up with creative ideas. And I hope to be able to bring that kind of assistance to 4J in developing its budget in these very difficult days ahead of us. Any questions?
The time?
This is actually Mondays are a great time for me, and personally and professionally, this is a time when I've got time to give.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions?
Okay, thanks.
Yes, but we do need you to sign your ballot. So, Gregory, so it's not meant to be a secret ballot of individual board members.
And please try to be legible.
Yes, sir.
We know what happened to Gail Merritt. Did she just drop out at the last minute, or?
No, I don't think she dropped out. She just didn't make it this evening.
Okay. There were two original candidates that withdrew. One okay. was a district employee. Correct. And we did not make clear that Oregon Budget Law does not allow you to be on the budget committee if you're a district employee. And the other, Lois Rosner, called today and dropped out. So okay. Gail Merritt and Carla Gary, who had to leave early, are okay. still to be considered okay. based on their written applications.
And we're to vote for two on this ballot.
We're to vote for two, right. Mm-hmm. This will be the 2 full-year terms.
Sign off quick enough.
You turned in... Chit-chat. I think chit-chat after you turn in the ballot.
No, I needed some
consultation. Oh, all right. Good account for you.
And the reason it takes four votes is we need a majority of board to take action. So that's at least four votes.
Alicia Hayes, Carla Gary, and Tim Gleason. Anne-Marie Levis, Tim Gleason, and Wendy Lang. Mary Walston, Carla Gray, and Wendy Lang. Gary, thank you. Jennifer Geller, Tim Gleason, and Wendy Lang. Jim Torrey, Wendy Lang, and Ben Sappington. Beth Thoreau, Tim Gleason, and Rita Radistitz. Oh, and me, Tim Gleason and Wendy Lang.
So you have two
Candidates on five votes, so you have two of 20 for your first presentation. Frankly, I feel like I'm at a loss because
I would.
Frankly, I would like to hear.
Yeah, so, I would too.
Do you have a moment to?
Yes,
can
I'll.
Well, yeah. Can you just?
We'll just revote this round.
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah,
I'd like
I know. I know you do. Just don't ignore the prior vote. Come in.
Well, we are going to let her talk, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Carla,
thanks for noticing that.
You're welcome. Thank you. I've been asking candidates for 3 minutes. I was not sure. So I stay pretty much at the speed limit.
Thank you for coming back.
Yeah, really.
Well, you didn't get stuck. So.
No, that's right. So it didn't matter. Why do I want to be on the back for you? I assume that's
the question.
That's
Because of my enduring commitment to education, and particularly by being sure that we are able to fund those things that allow us to ensure that every child has the opportunity to succeed. I very much appreciate on the board that equity may require an unequal distribution of resources to address the needs of all students. And I believe that the achievement gap, for me, continues to be an issue that has ramifications for all of our children and for all of our community. I am always hopeful about bringing a thoughtful, a circumspect conversation to the table, and I am committed that this district, and I care about all districts, but certainly this district, is able to really provide the kind of width and breadth of conversation around not necessarily what is easy and the courage to say what is best in the bigger picture. It may not impact the majority of people, but it may have the greatest impact. And being able to bring that courage and say we need to do this. You've obviously done a great deal with less and less, and the demand is going to be to do more and more and more. And I work so much with so many of the 4J schools. I was really happy to hear about the Bridge program. I created and run a research program for high school students in my office at the University of Oregon. So I know that when we are doing innovative things to bring young people into competition for success, then we're doing the right things. I have a commitment to making sure we are funding those things because they are different, because they have a chance of bringing us where we need to be. And we're going to have to be creative and courageous and be prepared to withstand scrutiny when people are wondering in shrinking budgets, how can we do this? I'd like for us to have the courage to say, how can we not? And be able to know that we have to look at the bigger picture. And the big picture is we can't continue this disparity and this gap because it's crushing all of us. So I've done this and have been blessed to be pretty successful. And I have a commitment to 4J because you have shown the commitment to the community. So. That's
one question, which is why I'm so happy you came back.
Okay.
it's going to be a tough year of making mm-hmm. some decisions. I mean, there just doesn't seem to be a good way out of it. When you talk about the important issues, and to me it's really people's understanding of the budget as well as some of these other issues, can you talk just a little bit about your understanding of budgets and trade-offs and things like that?
I think there are two things critical about budgets. One is that they're not magic, and that what you see and what we can do may be two different things. A better understanding of the public to understand what it costs, what it actually costs to do things. In addition to that, being able to help people see beyond the money to the prospect of what is this going to look like down the road. So I think education about budgeting, and I don't mean everybody has to take accounting 101 by any means, but I think doing a better job of explaining the realities of budgeting and exactly how much money we have, but then being very creative about what we can do with that, I think is really very important. The worst situations I find myself in is involved in looking at budget issues when I don't have a clear sense of the big picture, because then taking a particular part of a budget and looking at it without looking at the ramifications for the rest of it is frustrating, and it also gives people a false idea. Here's an example. We, of course, at the University of Oregon, we're never without, despite what people may think, budget issues. And so one unit will lose money, and another unit in the same crisis time will gain money. And it then appears to be, how can that be if we only have X amount of dollars? It's that kind of explanation that I think is really, really important. And so for me, budgets are about clarity, and they're also about truth, and being honest about what this means and showing people what it actually means as well. No one wants, well, people who like math enjoy it, but I think people just want clarity around a budget. And what does it mean when we say we have X amount of dollars? And where does it come from? That's my idea of budgeting.
Other questions?
We asked the other candidates this year because of what may transpire in January and also our declining enrollment. We will be having additional meetings. Meetings are on Monday night, and I just wanted to be sure you were aware that there may be more than the usual three or four meetings at the Budget Committee office.
That's not a problem. I don't anticipate that being a problem.
Any other questions? No, thank you again for returning.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And what we're voting for the remaining term for Mary Walston. Okay. Alicia Hayes. Well, it's just Alicia written down here.
I know. Well, it's kind of like Cher.
Carla Gary. Kind of like, yeah. Henry Levis, Carla Gary. Beth Giroux, Carla Gary. Jim Torrey, Carla Gary. Jennifer Geller, Carla Gary. Me, Carla Gary. Mary Walston, Carla Gary. Well, yeah. Thank you all for coming and staying, and for those of you who were not selected tonight, keep your hat in the pot. There'll be another opportunity of service, for sure. Okay. Adopt the revised boards and superintendents working agreements. Oh, yeah, thank you. Let's set a first meeting. Susan?
Thank you. We're recommending that you set the first meeting for Monday, November 16th.
Okay. I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Mary, good. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Passes unanimously. Thank you.
And that's at 7 p.m. in the auditorium across the hall.
Yeah, we told you guys that it was going to be fast and furious. Now, adopt the revised boards and superintendents' working agreements.
We went over the revisions at your last meeting. They really were discussed in an outcome of your board retreat in August. There were three revisions, and we did not have any additional changes based on last time's discussion. However, we do really have one related item, which we've said over the course of the year we want to adopt some guidelines around social networking and use of social networking by individual board members. No time.
Okay, this is the fruition of effort we started, I think, probably at our board retreat. We continued mm-hmm. on. So for those of you who might be surprised, we're going to perhaps not spend a lot of time on this. We have spent a lot of time mm-hmm. on this in prior meetings.
Change one word.
So is there any further discussion? Or any discussion?
I Mary. Appreciate the clarity as a new person coming on. The expectations are quite clear, so I appreciate it. Any work that I didn't have to participate in.
Mary didn't get to make her changes.
We
remember these often. Yeah. I'll move approval.
Second? Jennifer, second? Got that? Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Passes unanimously. Great. Items for action at a future meeting. George.
The contract between the board and me provides that you will annually evaluate me based on goals and objectives that are agreed upon by the board and the superintendent and the terms of the contract. As a part of that, the board policy provides that the standard criteria and policy directives to be used in my evaluation will have been adopted by the board in meetings open to the public no later than January of each year. I propose that the criteria to be used in my annual evaluation consists of our agreement in terms of the goals, the contract, and the position description. And as a part of that, we've done annually a self-evaluation that the superintendent does and the board looks at. We've also got proposed goals. And you've got those in front of you, and I do want to point out some changes since you saw the first draft, because in subsequent conversations with board leadership, some of you were involved in, we did make some modification to the superintendent's proposed goals, and I want to point out those, but indicate that these have not had a chance to be vetted with the superintendent's cabinet at this point. We will be looking at them again tomorrow, but I want to make sure that you know what changes have been added in addition to the ones that you've seen previously. So on page one, under the goals for student achievement, a new goal that you hadn't seen previously and which we have had considerable conversation about in board leadership and was prompted by some further discussion with the board, was the one that provides that the superintendent will conduct an alternative school review of the Eugene International High School program by March 1, 2010 to ensure that the program has a clearly distinctive instructional strategy and supports district goals for student achievement, access, and diversity in keeping with the alternative schools board policy and adopted school choice access and options report of March 2005. You will recall that we have done alternative school study at the elementary level and now at the middle school, and when originally talked about it, we talked about doing the high school, and this is the year to do that. So that has been added. The second one, also under the goal of student achievement, is to develop a plan for and complete a progress review of the North Eugene High School Small Schools Initiative by October of 2010 and develop recommendations regarding small school structure, school culture, district and school policies and practices that will build upon and support student success and meet student goals. As we've talked about a number of times, the Oregon Small Schools Initiative grant, which we've had now extended twice, I believe it's twice, isn't it, twice, does end at the end of this year. The board has had some interest in having a progress review report during the year. We had thought that we could probably try to do it perhaps in time for the budgeting cycle this year, but realized that that probably is not going to be able to happen, although that might still be a potential goal, but recognize that we would like to have something by fall of next year in terms of a progress report and evaluation review of the small schools and give the board a report on that. And then the other one is in the area of, which would be of interest to some of the new budget folks as well, is under the stewardship of district resources. While some of the other goals in that area have some date changes and some other minor modifications, there are a couple of pieces in here, and one in particular that I think the board has had some interest in, and under the area of developing strategy options for achieving the board's sustainable budget goal and presenting a proposal to the board and budget committee by February of 2011. The board has had considerable conversation about having a larger goal about a sustainable budget, and still a lot of conversation to be had about what exactly that means and will be looking like, but we wanted to start thinking about having me bring forward some strategy options for achieving the goal of sustainability. Also in that area, and one that is new to you, but the board has talked about, and the budget committee, in fact, has talked about on several occasions, is the goal of conducting a focused review of special education services in order to identify opportunities to increase student achievement and to optimize cost-effective strategies and practices, and provide a report to the board in April of 2010. And this one we are trying to synchronize as much as we can with the budget cycle, recognizing that, and you've heard some conversation about the student achievement piece of the special education, and particularly as we look at AYP and so forth, and we're making some great progress, I think, in that area. But you also know that every year we add about another $500,000 to the special education budget as we see increased needs. But we also need to see if there's some ways to gain more effectiveness as well as efficiency in terms of our special education program. So those are the two major changes. We will have some more processing tomorrow with superintendent staff, and hopefully in leadership on next Monday, or that is next Monday, mm-hmm. right? And then finalize something to bring back for action at your next board meeting on the 21st of October. So if there's some thoughts or additional comments, I'd like to hear those. I know that in leadership we'll have a chance to talk about it some more, but and I can also share with you the feedback that we developed through superintendent staff on Thursday. So.
Any discussion? Okay. Next is approved revisions to board policy LBE, public charter schools.
Caroline.
District-sponsored charter schools who we expect to be entering into a renewal process this year, and it seemed like a good time to update our board policy. There have been some minor changes made to charter school law in the last two legislative sessions, and we've also received policy guidance from OSBA. So what we've done with the revision that's in your packet is to update the charter school laws that apply to charter schools include the new requirement that charter schools maintain sound financial management systems. A little aside, we do have that in our policy in a different language, and we've got it in our contracts, but we wanted to line the language up with the statute. We've made some clarifications to reflect OSBA guidance, shortened the renewal process timeline to reflect what we think is probably more reasonable, and then made some minor corrections. It's pretty minor overall. You spend a lot of time working on something, and then you work up your little synthesis, and it's like, this looks like much ado about nothing. But it does line us up and make us more current. Probably the biggest change in charter school law was this past session when Senate Bill 767 addressed virtual charter schools. The Online Learning Task Force is currently meeting. They're expected to make a report in December. It may be that the special legislative session or the next legislative session really takes on online learning in on a larger scale, and it felt really premature to address that in our policy. I think there's much that we don't know, and it's really not time, but we could line everything up for the changes that have been made for all charter schools. I guess that's what I'd like to say, but I'm happy to entertain any questions.
The first section, 19, can you just give me a quick background? It's an explanation of how the public charter school will meet federal mandate of highly qualified teachers contained in the child left behind.
Well, what that is, that falls under contents of proposal. So our previous policy did not require that a charter school who is applying to the district for a charter explain this. And we are now adding that they must tell us in their initial application how they would meet the requirements of the highly and have highly qualified teachers. The more talked about teacher requirement is that at least half of the teachers be TSPC certified, and the highly qualified language followed up in a different time frame than the original charter school law. But it is something that they have to comply with as well. And so we wanted to make sure that our policy is really clear that...
Does that only apply to the licensed teachers they have?
No, it should also apply to any instructional assistants.
Okay, but the non-licensed teachers, if only 50% have to be licensed, the half that aren't licensed, how would they manage the HQ requirement?
I'm not 100% sure, but I know that the basic requirement is for them to be highly qualified. And so...
Where is Jerry Henderson when I need him?
I assume it's only for licensed people.
I don't really know that, but we can find out.
Jennifer.
This is a really minor thing, but I'm just going to raise this because I think that charter schools will probably use this as sort of a checklist when they're working with their district. I found the wording of under contents of proposal number 4 sort of confusing, and I don't know if it's just me. So I think if we look at it again, if there's something...
A description.
A night for an action in the future meeting. So.
Yeah. So
take a look at that.
Yeah, look at that.
Make that.
See if you make Jennifer happy. Jennifer.
Okay. I would like pictures so that I can follow along.
I don't.
I'll see what I can do. I'll see what I can do.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay.
Okay. Anything else that you'd like for me to look at? This is an opportunity. Okay, thank you.
Okay, we're committee comments, committee reports by individual board members. Alicia.
Great. Well, I wanted to take a second and thank everybody that applied for the budget committee, and it's hard to make a choice with just three, so really do appreciate it. A lot of great people out there willing to give their time and talent to to 4J. And then for those of us who are on the Budget Committee, just a little bit of cheery news. Today, LFO, Legislative Fiscal Office, has asked all people receiving state funds to come back with a proposal for a 10% cut in 5% increments. So keep that in mind and welcome.
For which year?
Coming up.
For the remainder of this year. Actually, Susan talked about that a little bit today, that Department of Ed as well has right. been asked to identify how they would make 10% additional cuts.
So are we a department?
Well, they would apply it to across the state agencies.
So,
in other words, this is going to hit us.
So if you take a 10% cut within half a year, you're...
Yes.
It's more than 10%, but I don't do math. Where was the math person?
After that cheering news, anything I say is going to be really good. Thank you to all the Budget Committee people who were here. It was just great and always is inspiring. It was a slow week for me. I only made it out to one school, but it really only has been 1 week since our last Budget Committee meeting. Lori and I were out at North in the IHS program. I'm sure I was doing that right. It was great. Got to talk to a couple of teachers, sit in a couple of classes. I actually took notes during one of the classes because I was inspired by it and just learned a lot from even being there for about 5 minutes. Just really am appreciating going out and visiting schools. I think I'm getting a really good picture of what's out there and what kids and teachers and principals are going through. So it's great.
Yeah.
Ditto Alicia and Anne Marie for those that apply for the Budget Committee. It's always inspiring to see people want to put in the time and the commitment to help make this district even better than it already is. In your red folder is an article by Rick Lear, and he was the keynote speaker at the Oregon Small Schools Initiative that Anne Marie and I went to a few weeks ago, and I thought you might find it interesting. He's speaking to small schools, but many of the principals in the article actually apply to any kind of transformational change that occurs in a district or in high schools in his case. And then just to follow up, as I said last time, I'm on the low-performing schools work team for the Race to the Top funds. And we did today received a parameters for the recommendations that we will be making to the design team. And interestingly enough, we've been having some conversations via technology, and there's a lot of interest in a board component in our recommendations. And so I'm going to have the opportunity to play with that and submit it to the committee. We're meeting next Wednesday, so whatever I write has to be done by then, as well as the pieces that other people are doing. The design team will be meeting that day, and they are going to be soliciting input once that draft is done from a number of different people, the Oregon School Boards Association. George, you probably know a number of others that are being asked to give input. And then the final proposal is due, I believe it's the middle of December. And what I'm hearing from Department of Ed folks is the same thing that George said he heard from Susan, is that they think that we've got a good chance of being considered seriously for those funds. I think the two things that aren't going to be probably, well, they're not coming out of the low-performing schools task team, is a piece around merit pay for teachers and increasing the number of charter schools in the state. And so we're not going to be addressing those two pieces that the federal government is actually looking at pretty closely. So I'll keep you informed.
Thanks for highlighting me, too. I'm more particles for someone to
say. Jim?
Yeah, a couple things here. Relating to what you said at the beginning of the meeting about the potential of grants on this mm-hmm. federal level, mm-hmm. I hope we're not forgetting about our passion for career and technology mm-hmm. and the potential of integrating mm-hmm. what we can do to really deal from an equity standpoint with kids that aren't targeted to go on to a four-year college. And given the fact that LCC would make a great partner, is there enough time to put something meaningful together that we might try to work out? That's one. Two, I was really impressed with the people who have opted to ask us to let them serve, both last week and this week. I hope we don't lose the opportunity to get back in touch with them immediately, those people who weren't successful, and offer them positions on committees. I heard some great discussions about equity. We've got some people out there I think would make great equity committee members. I hope we reach out and say, here are some ways you can serve. And the last thing, I think, the reason I believe we're having so many people step up now, I think that the budget committee, starting last year, has finally become something other than a rubber stamp. I really believe this last year and what we're going to be dealing with this year, this is an important committee, not just one that says, okay, here's the budget, vote yes. So, thanks for being willing to do it, and I look forward to working with you all.
See, I waited until you said my name. I wanted to thank Lori Moses and her staff for their work on the Summer Bridge Program. I know we're limited by funds, but the summer is long in Oregon. I think it's an underutilized vehicle to improve student performance in a lot of different ways. I remember reading several places this fall about how middle and upper-income children's reading actually improves over the summer and low-income children's performance drops. And, again, I know there are limitations to what we can do with money, but I just think that that's an area where there's all kinds of opportunities for helping kids achieve and do better in school. I also thought it was just important to just mention, since there was a lot of publicity around the drop-off situation at the Japanese immersion school, that I know the district's looking at a lot of different options, but that we're getting feedback that there are some things that can be done right now that require people to maybe change their habits and behaviors, and sometimes that's inconvenient, but it's also an important step in making kids safer, and everybody can join in to do that. So, that's all.
Mary, in your
thank you.
Career as a board member.
Okay, I'm glad I left this end of it. Okay. Thank you again for last week. I appreciate your support, and I do want to thank all the applicants, and it is bad that there's only, it's too bad there's only three spots, because all great candidates that. This was a hard thing for my first meeting. And I appreciate Jennifer's comments about the Gakuan School. I've also had many comments about that so far and understand that there are things we could do. So no word committee reports yet. So, next time.
Again, I'd like to thank all the applicants, too. And just I was just recalling that I think I applied twice, maybe three times for the budget committee and was never appointed. And so I found it was easier to run for office and be elected and get on that way. So there are multiple opportunities. Thanks again. And with that, we are adjourned.
You've been listening to the 4J School District Board Meeting. We are now going to resume our regular program on KRVM 1280 AM, Eugene Springfield.